Church, good to see everybody out on this beautiful Lord's Day. Ken and I want to express our appreciation and kindness for your prayers on behalf of Everett. He's going to have surgery on Tuesday that we pray will give him some relief and some answers and hopefully go in a good direction that he'll be able to get the right kind of treatment that he needs. And we appreciate your love and prayers. The world is made up of a lot of different kinds of people. There are people that believe that the world owes them everything. They feel like that they're entitled. They are kind of the bullies of the world who go and take whatever they want to take and do whatever they want to do and act like that they can do whatever they want to do without any recourse at all. They only think of themselves. They think of what they can get out of life. They justify their actions by their selfishness and their pride. But there are a lot of people that walk around in the world and they really just don't care about others. They look at other people and say they're not to be bothered by them. They really have little concern for the welfare of others. They've got things to do, places to go, and they're really not concerned about what other people are going through and what's happening in their lives. And then there are those that are on the other side of the road of life, realizing that all men are equal and that everyone needs somebody. And they not only care for themselves, they not only care for what their needs are, but they also try to help others and go beyond helping others. They view their life as one of service, even if it means being troubled with various things, being inconvenient. And they live a life really filled with humility, believing that what they wanted to do was to accomplish something in life that was important to them. They are people that believe that they are needing to help take care of people. It's in contrast, you remember what Cain said to God when he was asking about Abel, am I my brother's keeper? Well, the answer is yes. I am my brother's keeper. And there are people that realize that and that they want to help other people. And so there's a mixture of people in the world that we have to deal with. And Jesus tells us about these people in one of the great parables of this Good Samaritan. We're familiar with that one, and it's a great story. It's an application that tells us different kinds of people that are made up in the world. There's a man who tries to justify his prejudice and his hatred. There are those who believe that they have a right to take whatever they want from others, and they do. There's a victim who was abused and left to die. And there are two men who are leaders of God, supposedly godly men, who conveniently shun their duties. And then the main actor in this wonderful play that we call the Parable of the Good Samaritan is an individual that is a person of another nation. And he becomes that main character in a story of compassion and a story of grace and full of mercy. And the question that is asked is, who is my neighbor? Our story comes from the 10th chapter of Luke, and Jesus is approached by a man who is a lawyer and asks a question. And Jesus gives him an answer that he did not expect and was no doubt changing in his life. Let's read together in Luke chapter 10. We're going to begin reading in verse 25. When Luke says that, behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tested him, saying, Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? And he said to him, what is written in the law? What is your reading of it? So he answered and said, you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your strength, and with all of your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus says to him, well, you've answered rightly. Do this, and you will live. But he, wanting to justify himself, said to Jesus, well, who is my neighbor? Jesus answered and said, a certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho, fell among thieves, who stripped him of his clothing, wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a certain priest came down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise a Levite, when he arrived at the place, came and looked and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion on him. He went to him, he bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine, and set him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. And on the next day, when he departed, he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said, "Take care of him, and whatever more you spend when I come again, I will repay you." So now Jesus asked the lawyer, "So which of these 3 do you think was neighbor to him who fell among the thieves?" And he said, "He who showed mercy on him." And Jesus says to him, "Go and do likewise." The simplicity of the parables is that they tell just a very easy story that has logical conclusions to it. And the lawyer, who was a scribe person, obviously had an intention that he was trying to do. You'll notice that the text says that he was testing Jesus, and that's the tell of the story. Now, the question that he asked is probably the one that is setting up for something else, but this is a man who is versed in the law. As being a lawyer, he was, in that sense, a legal scholar of the law of Moses, and he would be people that they would go to and ask advice about what does this mean in the law, how does this relate in the law, and these were people that would spend a lot of time in the law. Another term that is often used about these individuals are scribes, and his purpose toward Jesus was really to test him. Another version says to make trial of him. And so the man comes to Jesus not really even with honest intent. He's not really trying to find an answer. He just wants to find something that he can entrap Jesus in and then maybe bring accusation against him. And it was really to set up Jesus to another question, because when he comes and says, "What shall I do to inherit eternal life?" His real question was to catch Jesus in, "Well, but who's my neighbor?" Because he knew the answer that Jesus was going to give that was going to include, "Well, love your neighbor as yourself." And he said, "Aha, you know, now I've got you, and now I know where I can catch you." So again, the lawyer knew the answer. He understood what was about to come. And what Jesus does is that he shows himself actually dishonest, because the text of Jesus tells us that he tries to justify himself. Now, his rationalization implies the obligation toward a neighbor. Well, it's not really clearly defined as we want to think. Now, the law of Moses, and really a lot of things we find in the law, it may be a little bit of head-scratching in some of those things, but this is not one of them. And so what he's trying to do is he's viewed the law, well, I know that that's what the law says, but let's talk about minimal responsibility. You know, sometimes when people look at what must I do, well, I don't really have to do exactly that. I can kind of get away with that. And so to understand the character of this man, who was the one who brought the question, his intent was dishonest. He was not really trying to find out what to do to have eternal life. What he wanted to do was trap Jesus. And he believed that there were neighbors, but he also believed that there were some people that were not his neighbors. You know, "You shall love your neighbors yourself" means to embrace their fellow Israelites, but you got to stay away from the poor people. You stay away from those sinners, and you definitely have nothing to do with the tax collectors. You see how he rationalized the law? Now, the law says, and Jesus, you know, as the man reiterated him in verse 27, it says that you shall love your neighbors yourself. But what had happened is that he said, "Yeah, but what about that neighbor thing?" And so his intent was to try to change the meaning of what a neighbor meant. And so Jesus then tells him the story. And it's interesting that what Luke does, he does this a lot, is that he says, "A certain lawyer." And now the story begins with a certain man. He's the victim in all of this. The road between Jerusalem and Jericho was well known. One of the things about the parables of Jesus is that it does elicit things that really are in real time. You know, the parable of the sower, they would definitely go out and do that kind of thing. And the parable of the tares and the wheat. And this parable really has a literal meaning to it, because that distance between Jerusalem and Jericho, it was a very dangerous place. It was very rocky, and a lot of robbers would hide there. And if you, by chance, decided to travel down that road by yourself, really was not a good idea. They would ambush, they would attack, they would rob, they'd bug them, and a lot of times they'd kill people. And this man, they came and they wounded him, probably fighting for his life. and they just left him for dead. They thought they had beaten him sufficiently and done harm to him. They thought he was going to die. So one of the things I want you to remember in the story as we go through it is that all the while, he's lying on the side of the road. He's still alive. He's still got a pulse. He can still hear. He is in a lot of pain, and he's in a lot of misery, and he is just hoping and begging for some human kindness. He is struggling for life on the side of the road. But then let's talk about the people that came down the road. It was a busy road. A lot of things going on the road. So a certain priest, see, he uses that word again. He was a man of God. A man who had the opportunity to do good to another human being. And being somebody who was a priest, somebody who was in the priesthood, somebody who was in the generations of priesthood, somebody who has been around these kinds of things all of his life, he sees an opportunity here about a man who would be lying on the side of the road. And of all people, you would expect a priest to have that kind of loving care and response and say, what can I do to help? He was supposedly a holy person. He was on the way maybe to the temple, and when he got there, people would say, oh, there's so-and-so, the priest, and what a godly man he is. And so, you know, the image of people would have of him, because that's what he was supposed to be. And he was one who was spiritual. He was religious and all of that. He has such a callous heart that he saw the man. It's not like he missed him. There's a man lying on the road, and he saw the man. But notice what happens in verse 20 and 31. He passed by on the other side. Now we could infer maybe from that he's walking down the road and he sees the man up there, and so he goes over here. But I mean, he's a priest. He's a man of God. He's one who is supposed to be thinking of spiritual things. And so he's unfeeling. He's unsympathetic. He's heartless. He's insensitive. A man of God. But then we've got another fellow who is a Levite, not exactly the priest. He did no better than the priest, in some ways worse. Levites were the workers in the temple. These were the guys who put everything together. You remember in the law of Moses when the tabernacle, they were the ones who assembled and put it all together. They were the ones who were the workers in the temple. They took care of everything from furnishings to arrangements. And they too were seen as religious people. They would be seen at the temple. Well, there's Fred. Fred's in here. I got to get your name straight. There's Fred, the Levite. Yeah, good job, Fred. Like the way you did that, you know. Light the candle and did whatever. So you see these guys, and you know, there's a sense of awe in these people that are working at the temple. And he was, again, seen as a very religious spirit. Now, what he did, in some ways, it's even worse than the priest. He actually came up to the man and looked at him. Well, boy, that looks bad. And then he also passed by on the other side. And what made his action so egregious was the fact that he literally came and looked at the guy. Now, don't lose the picture of the man lying on the side of the road. He's still alive, and he can still hear. And this was rocky, gravelly kind of road. It's not exactly like, you know, asphalt paved road. It could have even been some of their, the Romans paved roads. But still, he would have heard the Levite coming up to him. Imagine that he's lying there and he's in pain and he's suffering and he hears footsteps and he says, finally, somebody is coming to help me. And he hears the footsteps drawing closer and he's feeling like, okay, finally there's some mercy. And then what does he hear? He hears the footsteps go away and fade out of picture. Can you feel the wounded man hearing that and how sad that was? But then, Jesus says, a certain Samaritan. And it's one of those things that when Jesus said that, you should have seen the eyes of the lawyer. The Samaritans were half-breeds. They were the mixture that when the Assyrians came to the northern tribes many years before, and they took them into captivity, they intermingled them. in marriage. And so the Assyrians married the Jews, and what you created was the Samaritan religion and the Samaritan place. The Jews hated the Samaritans. They hated them so much that in that portion of Samaria, that the true Jew and the honest Jew, if he was traveling to go to Capernaum, for example, at the top of the Sea of Galilee, he would not set one foot in the land of Samaria. He would come up to the border of Samaria, and he would turn and go across the Jordan River, go all the way to the east side, and would not come back until he was all the way to the other side of Samaria. They hated and despised the Samaritans so much, they would not put their feet on the dust of that place. They were the representative. James Cope said this back in 1961. He said the Jews considered the Samaritans a mongrel race. I've just never forgotten that. But they were. They were hated. They despised the Samaritans. He was not a rabbi. He wasn't a priest. He wasn't elite. He was not a professional holy man as these other guys. He wasn't even in the eyes of the Jews. He wasn't even a good Jew. They hated these people. And yet the Samaritan becomes the chief actor in the story of Jesus explaining who the neighbor was. And you can see and understand why Jesus would use this wonderful parable to this man who came and trying to justify himself and trying to test Jesus, saying, who is my neighbor? And I can limit who that is. And Jesus says, let me tell you who your neighbor is. It's somebody that you have refused to accept as your neighbor. Because the thing that set this man apart from the robbers, from the priest, and from the Levite, is that it says in verse 33, but a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. The priest, well, the robbers had no compassion. The priest had no compassion. The Levite had less compassion because he came and looked at the man. The American Standard Version says that the Samaritan was moved with compassion. We live in a hard-hearted world. Compassion is needed. There's a lot of hatred. There's a lot of malice. There's a lot of prejudice. There's a lot of things that are going on, and here's a man who does not profess to be bound by all the laws and the teachings of the Jews. He knows he's a Samaritan. He's lived as a Samaritan all of his life. He steps across the national and racial barrier to become the chief actor in the story of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, to explain the answer of the question is, who really is the true neighbor? He saw a man. He didn't know who he was. He never asked him who he was. It didn't matter who he was. What he did is he saw a human being. He saw a creation of God. He saw somebody who needed help. He's the one that the Lord holds us forward and says, this is the kind of man who sees something in somebody else, because he saw somebody that was suffering. He didn't care what he was. He didn't care if he was a Samaritan. He didn't care if he was a Jew. He didn't care who he was. Here was somebody who was suffering. Because his heart was where it began. You see, it didn't just happen. He didn't do it to get glory. He saw somebody and it moved his heart. And that reminds us what the wise man said, that we need to keep our heart with all diligence, because this is the kind of man that he was. It also tells us the kind of men that the priest and the Levite were. And these were religious people, but they didn't have a heart of compassion. They didn't have time to take care of this man. They were too busy about their own world. They were self-consumed, and they just didn't care about this other person. Well, that tells you what kind of heart that they was, and that can also tell you what kind of worship they gave, which wasn't much. Matthew 12, Jesus says, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. Is that not the story of the Good Samaritan? This was not something that the Good Samaritan said, hey, I'm going to do this, and boy, that'll be a great story one day. He didn't do it to get accolades. He didn't do it to get any reward out of this. The fact is that his heart was moving. And I want to also suggest, we're going to kind of come back to this in just a moment, but I want you to see what his heart was thinking there. In verse 33, it says that he had compassion. Verse 34, he goes to him. Why? Because he's got a heart of compassion. He bandages his wounds. Why? Because he's got a heart of compassion. He pours on oil and wine. Why? Because he's got a heart of compassion. He sets him on his own animal. He brings him to an inn and takes care of him. He stays with this total stranger all night long. Why? That's his heart. That's the kind of heart he's got. It wasn't like, well, I hope you get okay over there, you know. His heart was saying, I'm going to do whatever has to be done to help you, because his hand was a ready agent of the heart, because he took action. He went over. And again, go back to the man on the side of the road. He hears footsteps and he's thinking, maybe, here we go again. I'm going to hear the footsteps come and then they're going to go away. And then to the amazement of this poor beaten man on the side of the road, he hears the footsteps come and then you know what he feels? The touch of a man who is looking at him, and he feels the warmth of the bandages and the oil and the wine, and he doesn't know who this person is that he's looking at, if he can see. But he just feels that, because this man doesn't have just a heart. He's doing something. He's a man of action. It was not the hand of a sluggard, because it moved quickly to take care of its needs. It was not the hand of a weakling. He stayed all night. I mean, you've done that. You've been up with a child all night long, and how long that is and exhausting it is. I mean, he was not a hireling. He didn't do this for glory. He wasn't afraid to go over and to take care of the man and then put him on his own animal and then walk him down to the inn and then pick him up and take him inside the inn and put him in a bed and get everything kind of ready and go to the innkeeper and said, I need more of this and I need more of that. I need some food and I need some water. And he stayed all night with him and he took care of him. And then when he left, he said, listen, here's some money. You take care of him, because guess what? I'm coming back. I'm going to come back. And I know it's a parable, but you kind of wish you kind of got that coming back story too. You know, about what all that meant. It was the hand that was the ready agent of a heart to do to a man and for a man that was in need, the very thing that would bring repair, consolation, and comfort. Is that not what James tells us in James chapter 2? Because see, when we talk about the faith of the priest and the Levite, we can say, well, you know, they've got to have a lot of faith to do what they've got to do, but faith alone is not going to save you. And the priest and the Levite exemplify that. James tells us in James chapter 2 and verse 14, what is the profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can faith save him? Well, obviously not. Can faith save him? No. If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to him, depart in peace, be warmed, hope you get something to eat, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? What good have you done? The priest of the Levite, well, I hope things work out for you. They didn't help him. The Samaritan came over and did something. And so thus also faith by itself, if it does not have works, it's dead. D-E-A, dead. Hammer dead. Dead as a wrong-neck rooster. My mother used to do that. But somebody will say that you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. That's the Samaritan. And so you see, the story is not just for the Samaritan. The thing about the Samaritan is he had plans. He was going somewhere. He had things to do. And he used his possessions, his animal, his oil, his wine, his time, and his money, and everything else. He spent the night with the man. He planned on returning to check him. And so Jesus says to the man, so, which of these three, priest, Levite, and Samaritan, which one of those is really the neighbor? See, the lawyer was trying to say, I know the law says that I'm to love my neighbor as myself, but I'm going to qualify that. Jesus says, you can't qualify that. Even though it's this man over here, and he uses Samaritan to show them, which one of these three? Well, the only answer the lawyer could give was the only one that could be given. He who showed mercy. And Jesus says, go and do likewise. And the reason is because that's what God has done for us. You see, what the priest and the Levite failed to understand is that the man on the side of the road was one of God's creation. And God had given mercy to all men, and he gave mercy to the priest and the Levite. But they denied that mercy to someone else. There are three pictures, and the final picture of the lesson is yours. We find ourselves on this road. One of the things that has to be remembered about these stories and parables is that this is not something disconnected from you and I. Jesus is answering this question to the lawyer because it applies to the question of the lawyer, but ladies and gentlemen, let me say to you now, this is going to be you and I, you and me. I don't know how to say that. It's going to be us. And so we have to understand we are one of these people where we find ourselves, because there are those who are the victims of things, the abused by enemies and slighted by friends and relieved by a stranger. There's a lot of selfishly absorbed passerbyers like the priest and the Levite. We become so absorbed in our world, in our me world, that it's all about me and that we're not concerned about anybody else. Or we could be the compassionate helper. And although he wasn't looking for this opportunity, when the opportunity presented itself, he immediately responded because that's the kind of man that he was. And so we see that, yes, we need to be that compassionate kind of helper. There are three rules of life found in this story. The iron rule. That was done by the robbers. People that go through life, might makes right. Or the silver rule, the priest and the Levite. Do not unto the other person what you would not have him do unto you. He has done them no harm, they would do him no harm. He's done them no good, they would do him no good. That's what they did for this man. Well, he hadn't harmed me, so I'm not going to harm him. And he hadn't done me any good, so I'm not going to do him any good either. That's a lousy way to live. And what we have called the golden rule, that's whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. That's the kind of person the Christian should be. There are three attitudes of life. The robbers, what can I get out of it? There are people who go through life, they're the opportunists. I just want to get. I want to get everything out of life. The only thing that concerns me is what I can enjoy. I'm going to live, my life in the full way as best I can. And then there are the shirkers and the priest and the Levite. What they were saying was, how can I get out of here? Any Georges in here? Let George do it. Let somebody else do it. It's not my job. That's their job. And so that's the shirkers. The Christian really comes to the attitude of, what more can I do? Well, what can I do? How can I help? And finally, three philosophies of life. What is thine is mine, I'm going to keep it. Or I will take it, I'm sorry. And there's people like that in the world. They're takers. And what is thine, I'm going to take it. And I'm going to get everything I want because I just want to enjoy everything. And it doesn't matter who I hurt, it doesn't matter what I do. And sadly, I think there's a greater population of those like the priest and the Levite that says that what is mine is mine and I'm going to keep it. not sharing anything with anybody. To be a Christian is to say, what is mine, we'll share it. Because if Jesus hadn't done that, we would not be here today. Because he gave it all. He gave everything. And he didn't have to. As Bob said in the Lord's Supper talk, Jesus said, I give it. So who is my neighbor? How do we respond to this? Well, we're on that page somewhere. Paul concludes in Romans 15, verse 1, when he says that we then who are strong ought to bear with the scruples of the weak and not to please ourselves. Let each of us please his neighbor for his good, leading to edification. For even Christ did not please himself, but as it is written, the reproaches of those who reproached you fell on me. Who's my neighbor? They don't always live next door. There are people out there that are dying without Christ. They're not dying with the idea that, well, I'm not making enough money. They're dying because they're losing their soul. We've got to have compassion on them. We've got to help them. And then there are times that we need to help others to show the glory of Christ in our life. And so the question that we conclude with this morning, who will follow Jesus? You willing to take up the banner? You willing to be the Samaritan that does the good to show the glory of God in his life? To bring others to Christ? Can you imagine what will happen if each one of us bring one person to Christ this year? One. Not two, three, four, one. If we each bring one person to Christ, we have shown the glory of God to save a soul. Who will follow Jesus? Let's stand as we sing.
Who will follow Jesus?